Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Happy December to everyone.
We have GDP updates from the U.S., better than expected news, over 5% growth in the third quarter. In Canada, minus 1.1%. What are we learning from these numbers?
Yeah, so the U.S. data was revised up a bit from what had previously been expected. I think there's been a lot of good work now done on some of the paycheck protection program and things that were infusing government money into the economy, especially in the U.S. in the, you know, the during the early part of the third quarter. Anyway, it has since been tourniqueted somewhat by people bringing to the attention of the IRS that there's a lot of fraud going on and people making improper claims to get money, and huge amounts, billions, have been handed out. There was a bunch of companies helping people to make these claims, Kevin O'Leary being one of the people who is heading up one of these companies. There's a name from Canada's history that, I've never been a huge fan of Kevin. Anyhow, so there was a lot of money being pumped in from the government, and that definitely helped with spending in the third quarter. But when we look at the actual consumer spending, for example, over the holiday week that just happened, you know, the Black Friday spending, that called that because it's the opportunity for retailers to finally break even if there's enough holiday spending in the last, 6 weeks, so this sort of thing of the year. The data was underwhelming in terms of that spending in the last week or so. The traffic was significantly lower. People were buying, looking for discounts, buying less on volume, and we see that too as we head into the data for November and December. Again, usually the biggest spend period of the entire year for consumers, and the Michigan Consumer Survey numbers surveys showed that they expect to spend less this holiday season. Same thing for Canadian data. Deloitte's just did a survey of Canadians, and they're planning to spend 11% less on average this year than last year. So, it matters because consumer spending is a huge part of our GDP growth drivers. In the United States, it's about 67% GDP growth comes from consumer spending. In Canada, it's about 58%. And so those two things, when you start to see the consumer making shifts away from discretionary purchases to, and big ticket items, which they've been, shunning for some time now in favor of essentials, groceries and things they can't live without. And all the major retailers have been talking about that trend, right? So, it was timely this month that we saw things like a bunch of furniture retailers filing for bankruptcy, Mastermind Games saying they need to get a buyer or they're going bankrupt in January. So this is a part of what all the major CEOs, Target, Walmart, Home Depot, they've all been talking about, the downshift in consumer spending. So it matters. And when we look at the Canadian GDP numbers that were also updated today, of course, as you mentioned, we had a negative read for the third quarter of in Canada, Now, all of these numbers have to be taken with a grain of salt because they always get, you know, there's a three different passes and estimates, and then they update them, and then, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, they can look back and actually revise the GDP numbers that came out. So it's a very fluid sort of, because it's a big complicated calculation and there's a lot of moving parts. But anyway, the best estimate that we have is that the Canadian economy contracted in the third quarter. That was led by a downturn in the consumer spending sector, particularly on goods, which was negative 1.5%. So contraction there in the amount of goods people are buying. Saw a similar thing in the United States. Durable goods were off more than 5% in the third quarter. And that correlates very strongly with this, you know, this consumer sentiment, the feeling they have about their financial fitness. And a lot of people are answering surveys in a very negative way right now. Certainly in Canada, 43% of Canadians surveyed have said that they're in worse financial shape this year than the year before. And then the other big component, of course, of GDP growth is business investment. And companies that, you know, are looking at CEOs are all sort of saying they see negative things happening, you know, downshift in demand in goods. Demand it from their customers, and so they're not spending on, you know, capital expenditure. They're not planning to hire. They're actually planning to cut labor costs. So all of this feeds into kind of negative sentiment. So business investment in Canada actually contracted 10% in the third quarter and has had a negative trend year over year. So that's a biggie because that's another major component of GDP. And so the only thing that really worked in favor of Canada in the third quarter was a 7% increase in government spending, you know, and so the point is, you know, without that, we would have had a contraction that was about 3% of GDP growth in the third quarter. So the domestic economy is quite weak. Exports are quite weak as well. There's less demand globally. So it's not just that we're an island here in North America. Europe's seeing the same thing. Asia's seeing the same thing. You know, it's very much a global story. And in Canada, of course, we've had this infusion of immigration, which has become a very volatile topic because people are seeing, as I said, 43% of people surveyed are saying they're worse off financially, and they're looking for why that is. Well, the reason that is that we're, you know, earning less income-wise as a nation, and we are spreading it among more and more people. So our per capita GDP has actually declined for 5 straight quarters, and that is a troubling thing. That means less resources to share amongst more and more people. So obviously that's not a comfortable fit. And even on a actual real GDP basis, if you look at the last 4 quarters, so a year of data, our GDP growth has averaged 0.4%, Jim. So we've had a really weak year. We're not even officially in recession yet, and things are looking worse heading into 2024. Now, the silver lining there is that it looks like the central bank, certainly in Canada, has done more than enough to kill the inflationary impulse, and we have seen a big downturn in CPI inflation, consumer price inflation. In fact, if you took out the rents component, which is this, you know, housing is this big problem that we have for the whole economy and the whole nation. But as the price of that is now coming down, and it does so at lags of many quarters, as we've spoken before, but as that comes off, rents are finally starting to come off. They've been very stubbornly high as landlords have sort of galloped after trying to increase rents to offset their rise in mortgage costs. So we've had this big inflationary impulse in rents and the cost of housing in Canada. And now that so many people are spending huge chunks of their disposable income just to keep the shelter over their heads, that's, you know, diverting cash away from all other kinds of spending and investment in the economy. So the good news here is that that trend is going to continue to put pressure on housing and shelter inflation, which means the cost of living is going down. If you take out the cost of shelter, you know, 70% of the CPI basket is already at an inflation rate falling, like under 2%, so below the central bank's target. So once housing, you know, continues to come down further, we're likely to see a CPI number around zero as early as the first quarter of 2024. So the good news there, as I say, is that the cost of living is, inflation seems to be on its back leg, rolling over. That will take some of the pressure off of households. Cost of shelter is going to continue to work lower over time. One of the kind of cross purposes there is that twofold. One is that, you know, we know there's $1 trillion of Canadian mortgages coming up for renewal between now and 2026, so essentially over the next couple of years. And, of course, all of them at this point are going to be maturing at higher rates significantly, something like 30% higher interest rates than they currently are paying. So as that continues to happen, there's going to be an impulse there for people to list those properties for sale because so many people bought, you know, imprudently during the bubble phase where they were paying too much and, you know, properties didn't make any sense in terms of their carry even for, as an investment or a rental property. So more and more people are going to want a list to sell, and that will result in price discovery, in other words, pressure. We're already seeing that with new listings every week coming out. Now, a lot of people are hoping that the spring will be better, or that the central banks will be cutting interest rates by the spring, which it appears that they will. Like the futures market is currently, for example, in Canada expecting that there could be, well, actually in both countries, that there could be a rate cut as early as March because of this downdraft that's happening now in inflation and GDP growth. And so I guess the good news there is that the mortgage rates, because the bond market is looking at this and seeing that interest rates are likely to start being cut in terms of at the short end, the policy rates in early 24, the bond market has been rallying, which brings down yields, which means that mortgage rates are going to be slightly less than they were, even a month ago. So all of that to say that inflation seems to be not our problem now. The downturn in the economy seems to be the main theme, and the issue there, of course, is rising unemployment.
Yes, TD Bank announcing it's cutting its workforce 3% or 3,000 jobs. Are the other banks doing the same thing as well? Or is AI replacing those people, or are they just not replacing them at all?
No, I mean, it's not so much AI in the near term. It's mostly to do with this epic credit cycle which we had, where there was just a fire hose of money being spewed out of lenders supported by fiscal support from the government. We got the fall economic statement out of the federal government last week, and the main takeaway there is that they have tried to, approve some more fiscal spending programs, but most of them are not likely to start until 2025. So we've got, 13 months between now and then, when there's not much cavalry coming to the rescue, so to speak, in terms of, new government spending in the economy. And as I said, that was the major support for GDP in the third quarter. It actually has been for the last couple of years. So when you don't see that coming to the rescue, you've got to downsize this big bubble that happened in the financial services sector in particular, where, they were giving out loans and mortgages and, hand over fist, and they added all these new people or expanded their departments. Well, what's happening now, of course, is the banks are starting to report their latest quarterly earnings, and they're having to set aside more and more in loan loss provisions. So we got the Bank of Nova Scotia this month, who arguably has been one of the more conservative lenders and not doing a great deal of these negative amortizing mortgages, which many of the others were falling over each other to hand out to people. But the Bank of Nova Scotia had to increase its loan loss provision to $1.3 billion in this quarter, the latest quarter, which is actually almost double what was expected. And the thing there being that their profits were hit by a negative 26% year over year for the bank earnings. And that's a direct function of having a lot less loans, and also having to set aside for money they're never going to get paid back. Because there's a lot of this, as I say, the clearing events that are happening right now in the housing market, those that don't have to sell are trying to sort of wait it out and trying to pretend and extend, keep prices at, marked to what they might have been a year ago. Those that are motivated are having to take big losses or reductions in their price expectations. We're seeing that across the board in the GTA. And then there's a bunch of power sales happening too, where, you know, prices are, the properties are finally selling at $300,000 and $400,000 and $500,000 under what they, you know, the person paid at the peak of the mania. So there's going to have to be, you know, the banks are very astute at trying to maintain their profit margins. So when you get a 26% decline, you can expect they're going to be looking to cut overhead in every possible way. And that includes, you know, of course, all the bank workers, and especially in departments like marketing, capital markets, which is, you know, again, in Canada, the TSX is, you know, basically gone nowhere for the last 30 months. There's been a dearth of new issues. We've got contracting financial conditions throughout the system, and that's just not good for profits or employment. We've already had an increase in the Canadian unemployment rate. And this is the part that's very important for people to understand. The next leg of this is where the unemployment rate begins to rise sharply, right? So we have had an increase of 0.5% already off the bottom for both the U.S. and Canada. And when that happens, you traditionally are already in a recession. And then it's during the recession. So say the first 8 months of a contraction in the overall economy, when the unemployment rate really starts to pick up, and it actually will climb typically even after the bottom of the economy. Even when you're into the next expansion, they'll still be shedding jobs. And so that's part of what pressures the consumer so much, who is already coming into this with too much debt, not enough savings, and too much, you know, illiquidity in the assets that they do have. People are finding really quickly that housing's not very liquid, right? It's not a market-traded asset where you can just sort of hit the bid and sell it in a day. You need to actually have people with not just, you know, either access to credit that they can get approved to bring, but sometimes, you know, they're also, even the people that have equity or don't need a mortgage need to sell first. And so there's this, you know, delay function that comes into it, and it really holds up the whole cycle. So I think unemployment is the next thing we should be expecting to see rise, and that will put further stress in the household sector.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Recyclico, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, someone once famously said, the rich are different than the rest of us, but are they when it comes to consumer spending?
Well, they tend to spend considerably more, of course. They tend to have their interest in things like luxury goods can be quite elevated. But what's interesting about these this downturn is that we're already seeing that luxury goods sales are falling more than regular sales. So that's one indicator to show you that people with so-called, you know, higher net worth are pulling back as well. And I think if you think about it, you know, I've mentioned this before, because there's this kind of belief, misplaced mostly, that wealthy people or people that have higher incomes, you know, tend to buy things cash or don't borrow or, you know, live within their means. And that's actually not the norm. There are, of course, some people of all income levels which are quite frugal or careful to live below their means and to keep savings in things that are liquid instead of always in, you know, market assets and that sort of thing. But in general, during the pandemic, when everyone was buying up, for example, you know, whether it was investment properties or cottages, ski resorts, all this sort of thing, I was pointing out at the time, a good deal of them were putting mortgages on their primary residence, whether it was in cities like Toronto or Vancouver, in order to get a down payment, and then they went and bought these additional properties properties with mortgages of their own. So now they've got financing on everything, and the rates are going up or have already gone up on all those properties. So to the extent that they still have sufficient income to pay all that, that's fine. But most people don't like to feel like, you know, every dollar spoken for as it comes in, or that they're tight, or, you know, that they're, for example, servicing properties that the price is falling. And the same goes for securities markets. A lot of the so-called wealthy people have whatever savings they have in things like equity markets or commercial debt markets, REITs, all these things, which have all been declining for the last couple of years in price. And here's the real kicker, which is so important to understand, is that the bulk of declines in those risky securities always happen after the central banks have finished their tightening cycle. So 82% of the declines that have happened on average in the securities markets happen when the central banks have paused and when they start to cut. So a lot of people, for example, there's a relief rally today in the Dow Jones, which is dividend-centric, because there's, again, with the data that's come out, it looks more and more like central banks will be pausing again in December, which will be the fifth month of pause without taking any further tightening action in terms of rate hikes. There's never been a period in history when they paused for 5 months and then gone back to tightening. So probabilistically, they're done their hiking this cycle, and the expectation is they'll start cutting. So there's always a relief rally when everyone goes, oh, thank God, they're done tightening. So there's this naive expectation that that'll solve all the problems. If they don't tighten anything more anymore, everything will be fine. But again, the lagged effects of that are such that we're going to feel the impact of the tightening they've already done over the next year and beyond, and there's no big fiscal stimulus programs, you know, in the pipeline here to come to the rescue to have to sort of offset. So that means that the economy is basically on its own here, and we know we've got, you know, we're not firing on all cylinders because of all the reasons that I've mentioned. So as we get that weakness spreading in 2024, and they, you know, there'll be no doubt a time when, if it's March or whenever it is, the central banks say, okay, we're going to cut rates, you'll get another rally. But we've seen this so many times in cycles where you get a rally, but then you get a realization that, oh dear, profits are taking a big dump. So that means that the valuations on these assets that were already really rich were actually obscene and made no sense. And that's when you start to see the next leg of selling. And there's a contagion impact there because, as I say, the people that have these market assets are the same people that have businesses that are now starting to feel the pinch, you know, with less sales and overhead, and they're starting to try and cut. They're the ones that are seeing their property values decline. They're the ones that are also facing high leverage because they borrow a lot because they can, because banks will give people with higher income more debt. And so they have, pinch coming on all fronts, their savings, their balance sheet, their businesses, their income statement. And so that tends to drive them wanting to liquidate things across the board. And that's part of what drives the next final leg down into the bottom of a bear market, is that capitulation selling, where people really start to panic and think it's never going to get any better, it's only going to get worse, which is the actual antithesis of today. Sentiment today remains so bullish because this handful of tech stocks, right, the Magnificent Seven, have really, and NVIDIA in particular, you know, the semiconductor story, has attributed almost 14% of the S&P's rise this year has come from that one stock, and the rest from this handful of tech companies, while everything else is basically flat and negative. You know, the Russell 2000, which is the small cap industry index for the more economically sensitive companies, has not participated, is flat year to date, is off heavily from its peak 2 years ago. Same as I say that the TSX has had a 2 years, 30 months of nothing. It's been propped up in the last little while by its oil exposure because it's got about 20% in oil and gas, which tends to be late cycle. But, you know, here we've got OPEC extending the cuts that they are intending, but the U.S. is producing its, you know, the most oil and gas ever in its history right now. So you've got more supply coming on. So it's very typical that you see oil and gas hold up late as financials, which lead, have already turned lower. As I say, the Canadian Financial Index is still off more than 16%, even though it rebounded a bit this month from its peak in 2022. So financials are leading lower because of the credit cycle, because of the consumer and the realty, the over-leverage in the economy. So that's moving towards, you know, that's all very typical of how it goes. The tech sector, we've seen this so many times. I remember vividly in 2000 and 2008, you got this rebound again in tech where, you know, it came back to the prior peak or close to it. And people were like, oh, it's all clear, it's all good because the central banks are going to cut rates, everything's fine. But then you get the, as I say, 80% of the bear market decline, especially during a recessionary period, happens once the central banks go back to cutting. And that's because panic starts to spread about how overpaid they, you know, how overvalued things were at the peak and how many inappropriate mathematical calculations were made, and then people have to sort of face that and they start selling. So I think we're likely to see, you know, we could potentially see a bottom in the equity market later in 2024, maybe a year from now, if we get kind of a sort of a typical response here with a recession, and then we'll see the sentiments switch to very negative, and at that point, you know, prices will probably be the most attractive we've seen since 2008. So the question here is, does the economy fare better or worse than it did in the great financial crisis? And I would argue that there's prospect here, and certainly in Canada, for the economy to have a harder go because we've got this, you know, asset bubbles on all fronts. The good news there is that the government bond stuff has been rebounding again, as we thought it would. As soon as you get to the end of the hiking cycle, you typically get the government bond side rallying into the recession as everything else comes back down. So we might see some more strength in December because, you know, seasonally, like 70% of the time, you get positive rally in the stock market November and December. Now, 30% of the time, you didn't. And in a few years there, like 2018, the stock market took a huge leg down in December. So nothing is for sure here. We could very well see either outcome, frankly, in the next month. But the longer-term view here is that we've got still a lot of downside work to do on the risk assets, and that's going to bring a clearing event and probably some awesome opportunities. But it's just, you know, people have to be able to weather the storm from here to there.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.